pine gap has always been a very a sore point amongst IPAN and its members. Can you speak to our listeners about why it's such a sore point?
Well, I think many Australians have been aware for a very long time that pine gap is a problem. In particular now, it's a very serious problem for, I guess, three reasons. Firstly, pine gap's role in American nuclear planning and operations means that if there is a nuclear war, then pine gap will be involved in that. That also means that as far as Russia and China are concerned, in the event of a major war, pine gap becomes a high priority target. I guess the second set of reasons are to do with particular activities at pine gap. Many people know very well now that signals interception, communication intercepted by pine gap and the satellites it control, are used by the Central Intelligence Agency and the US Department of Defense to generate target data on what are people who are called terrorists or people who are operating in countries with which the United States and Australia are not at war, so Yemen or Afghanistan or Somalia, to generate prospective targets for drone assassinations, so-called kill lists. Now, pine gap doesn't directly get involved in that, but it does provide the data that make that possible. And then there's a kind of third layer, which I think people are becoming aware of today, particularly, which is pine gap's relationship to the horrific ongoing war and indeed genocide in Gaza. Material, signals interception, communications interceptions, passing through pine gap, downlink to pine gap, processed by pine gap, are passed on back automatically to the American National Security Agency. Essentially, the NSA controls all of these issues operationally. And we know from documents that Edward Snowden provided to the global public that there is a very dense network of bilateral agreements between the National Security Agency and its Israeli equivalents in the IDF. And that means that there are currently no restrictions on data collected and processed by Pine Gap being passed through the NSA to the IDF. So that renders Australia effectively, potentially, and I would say almost certainly actually, complicit in genocide.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because many people see it as being very far away and nothing to do with us, except that we are actually complicit.
I think it's one of the extraordinary things about Australia is that, you know, apart from certain issues about our settler colonial background, which blind us to some of the obvious aspects about what's happening in Gaza, is that most Australians live in the southeastern seaboard. They pay no attention to the northern half of the country, very little attention to the west. Pine Gap is in central Australia, but as far as most Australians are concerned, it's not there. We don't know about it, or if we know about it, it's vaguely in the back of our minds. I think in a certain way, Pine Gap is, if you like, the very centre of the malign version of what Australia is within the US empire. If we think of Uluru as the centre of a positive possibility for a future Australia based on recognition of our actual history, then Pine Gap is the intense negative of that. So I think it's a lot of people find it convenient to recognise that it's there, but not think any further.
Well, recently, Senator Jackie Lambie, and it's one of the reasons why we're talking to you about Pine Gap in particular, she put forward the notion that since the Trump administration is playing hardball when it comes to tariffs, etc., that we should close down Pine Gap. Now, laudable as it might be to want to close down Pine Gap, you actually point out that this means that there is a price that Australia is prepared to receive to keep it open.
Yes, I think that's right. I'm pretty sure that was not Senator Lambie's intention. I actually really approve of her taking an Australian sovereignty-focused approach to the bullying that is coming from the Trump administration. And if you like, what some people call the anticipatory compliance by the corporations and governments seeking to curry favour with this extraordinarily vile administration and very dangerous administration that has emerged. I think her idea does logically mean that if the Trump administration thought about it, they could say, okay, we'll let you have your, we'll take you off the list for tariffs as long as you assure us that Pine Gap is secure for our purposes. I suspect that was not what she intended, but it does come down to saying, well, there is a price for the rent, and the Americans have got to be prepared to pay that price. The problem is, of course, that no amount of money can ameliorate the extraordinary and very unusual risks that Pine Gap poses for Australia. Not to say there's nothing to negotiate, but it's certainly not something to negotiate about through money, and in particular, about what are really pretty trivial steel tariffs.
One of the things that you do point out is that if you look at it in a much closer, sort of more personal way, Alice Springs becomes a target. So if there's a nuclear war, Alice Springs becomes a target. And you talked about the idea that people in other parts of Australia just seem to not notice the Northern Territory and the what's going on up there, which is an amassing of American troops. Recently, IPAN pointed out, and I don't know if you want to comment on this, but it pointed out that there was a American contractor that was there to deal with airline fuel that just built a substation there without any permits at all. And the Northern Territory government just said, oh, well, that's okay. So what really we're saying, there's no transparency from the Australian side, and there's just complete compliance to America's wish, as if we are a feudal serf state.
Well, I think there's a long history of Australian government either turning a blind eye to problems they know about American bases in Australia, operational problems or risks posed by them. And in other cases, they simply don't know because they don't have the capacity to look at it. In the case of that, I think the very, very large jet fuel facility on Darwin Harbour, which was completed about 2 or 3 years ago, it's a very large one. Not the kind of one that you have on a base itself. It's much bigger than that. It's meant to be a reserve supply for American expeditionary forces, as they call them, which could operate from Australia or from other parts of Southeast Asia or Guam. And in particular, what's extraordinary is that this was built without proper environmental considerations. Now, you don't have to be anti-American in any way to say, think what would happen to Darwin Harbour, not if there was an attack, but simply if there was a very serious leak. This would be a massive pollution event. And one would think even that the safety authorities, national and at state level or territory level, would have taken this into account, but that appears not to be in the case. I think IPAN is quite right to bring this up. If I can just make one other illustration of that, the point about the North and the way in which blind spot plays out that particular aspect of not asking, not looking, turning our eyes away. The United States Air Force is about to deploy on what they call rotational deployment. That means essentially fly in, fly out for a period of weeks or months each year, up to 6 B-52 Stratocaurus Fortress strategic bombers to fly them into the airfield, one of our most important and certainly the most important northern air base. The RAF base Tindor outside the town of Katherine in the Northern Territory. That's about 300k south of Darwin. This is a really, really big matter. It's extremely important. It's extremely important for some of the things we were talking about earlier, namely our potential support for operational US operations against China. like Pine Gap, sort of makes that relatively automatic. It's very hard to say, oh, by the way, I think we don't want to go along with you and what you're planning this week. It's far too late. It's technically built into the plans. But more importantly, there's a bad history in Australia of Australian governments, in particular the Defence Department, not inquiring into whether or not the B-52s which come, which are huge aircraft, which come actually in two different versions. One carry only conventional non-nuclear weapons, and the other carry both nuclear weapons and conventional weapons, in other words, the nuclear capable. So a fundamental question any Australian government should be asking is, are the B-52s you're sending to us for this rotational development, still here for a long time, for a very serious strategic and operational purpose, will these be the nuclear capable ones, or will they not? We have on record when then Senator Scott Ludlam asked the chief of the Defence Force about 10, 12 years ago, who was an RAAF general, or air commodore, I should say, be polite. You know, do we ask the Americans whether the B-52s that fly into Australia for exercise purposes in those days, do we ask whether there's a nuclear-capable version or not? And the answer, astonishingly and explicitly, was we do not ask.
We're now establishing the fact that the Australian government and its minions fall all over themselves for the Americans, do whatever they are asked, without the general Australian sovereignty actually being important in their calculations. With the Trump administration having made it clear to the Europeans, who are also in thrall to the Five Eyes defence, in inverted commas, arrangements that the US have set up globally, are we now in the hands of our enemies, do you think?
I think there's no doubt that the Trump administration has effectively destroyed the post-war, post-Second World War worldwide network of American alliances, in the sense that there was, in so-called Atlanticists in Europe, the kind of pro-alliance people in Australia, the so-called bipartisan consensus on the alliance, with Labor members of the Parliament telling IPAN, and perhaps in this case more importantly, ICAN, the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons, that there's no way an Australian government can even talk about places like Pine Gap because of the threat to the alliance. So please, would you please shut up about this? I think that level of entirely automatic support for the alliance has now been really badly damaged. It's not clear exactly what's going to happen now, but I think a lot of people are coming to the conclusion, exactly as you stated, that the United States is, at very least, potentially, if not actually, a threat to Australia, even in military terms. It's certainly an economic threat to Australia. It's certainly a political threat to Australia, and a growing one, given the threats to things like the pharmaceutical benefit scheme that the Trump administration is talking about. And this morning, a whole lot of tech brothers saying they want to have removed any media restrictions on their activities in Australia. So those kind of risks and threats are emanating. It's not entirely impossible to talk about the United States being a military threat to Australia, but I think that that process is still working it through. And I think, firstly, Australian governments have to develop a spine about this matter. And I'll just say, give you one example. Everything we've been talking about has been true, more or less unchanged, from the 1980s through to the present. However, there was one government, and it was an unlikely one, that said to the Americans, if you want to have B-52s in Australia, you must, one, tell us whether they are going to be nuclear armed or not. Secondly, we will not permit them to be nuclear armed without a further separate, entirely separate agreement, which they did not want to make. And thirdly, you will accept that we will tell our public about both of these matters and that you will publicly confirm that. That was Malcolm Fraser in 1980-81.
He's turning into an interesting case study, the old Malcolm, isn't he?
Well, exactly. was entirely on sovereign ground. And we all know that Malcolm was a cold warrior. We know very well that he misread the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, which was a pretty vile thing in itself, but it certainly wasn't sort of the Soviet Empire expanding to the seas of the Indian Ocean. But he also said, look, I want to support the alliance in those terms by allowing B-52, but alone of every country which has ever accepted hosting of B-52s, Fraser said, there won't be any nuclear weapons. You will tell us if there are going to be nuclear weapons. You will accept the fact that we are going to tell our public about this, that there are no nuclear weapons, and you will confirm that in public. No other government, certainly not the succeeding Hawke, Keating, Howard, and everything else since then, government in Australia, certainly not in Britain, certainly not in Spain, in many other countries. So there is a record of a government in Australia which, under very unusual circumstances, I mean, the 1980s were a pretty frightening time all round, which did say, OK, there are clear limits to the alliance with the United States, and sovereignty is our starting point.
I've spoken to a variety of people who actually think that AUKUS, it's now not even believed that they're, you know, they think that it's just a whole lot of money going to America and there will be, there are no guarantees that the United States will actually supply the subs.
Well, I think I would agree with that. It's been clear for a long time that, that certain elements in the US Department of Defense or close to it, such as Kurt Campbell, former Deputy Secretary of Defense, made it very clear that, well, these are the Virginia-class submarines second-hand that the Australians will get. They'll really be our submarines, and we'll be able to take control of them. And the Congressional Research Service report, I think, a month or 2 months ago, the Congressional Research Service is a very serious part of Congress and highly respected researchers and fairly independent, actually said that very clearly. That's one possibility. And that means we have no sovereign control over those submarines. That's before we start talking about the extraordinary idea that we will pay vast amounts of money, the better part of $350 billion, to the British, of all people, to build nuclear submarines, which have not even been designed yet.
It's just weird. Now, the whole thing's weird.
It's deeply weird, and I don't know about you, but I'm not aware of any significant piece of engineering that any of us would think about buying from the British. They don't make cars. They don't make motorcycles. Maybe they make fridges. I don't know. But this is I'm being facetious.
We're supposed to be propping up these moribund colonial powers.
Well, I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think another way of thinking about this is that this is a plan which stretches out to the 2050s, so I'm not going to be around then. Look at any conventional defence project budget in Australia. They're always over budget, over time, underfunctioning. It's not being rude about them. They're big and complicated, and that's the nature of mega projects. Think about some of the ones we've got in Victoria, for example.
That always happens.
In other words, the amount of money is going to be much greater. Secondly, the results are always contingent. And I think the SETA project involves so many contingent matters over three decades that at any one point it could be derailed. We're looking at the moment about the first half, which is the second-hand American Virginia-class submarines. And already very serious people like Admiral Chris Barry, former Chief of Defence Force, have just said, look, we cannot rely on this, and America is not a reliable ally. And AUKUS is the first victim of this in that way of viewing it. Other people would say, well, I'm not sure we need these submarines in any case, or they're not fit for purpose, or they bring their own risks, both of which I would agree with. But clearly, AUKUS is a very fragile set of projects, and it's coming apart even before Trump.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, the other thing that I was asked to ask you about was the amount of foreign spending in Australian defence with companies like ANWR, the South Korean company, and Rimetal, a German-based company which has been accused of using complex mechanisms to bypass international laws and sanctions, particularly by re-exporting weapons to conflict zones such as Ukraine and Israel. Huge amounts of contracts are going to these people.
Well, I think, yes, I mean, Hanwha is a pretty big deal in Korea. There are any number of foreign military industry companies that operate in Australia which have very serious relationships with Israel, as well as Saudi Arabia, for example, just to take two examples there. And the regulation of exports by countries like Britain, as well as Australia, even short of the examples you've mentioned, has been subject to very serious challenge. And in Australia, there's been extremely good work done about the holes in our arms export regimes, which is what should be controlling all these things. The other thing to say is that we really do not have an Australian arms industry, with a very few exceptions of genuinely Australian companies. What we have are the branch offices of United States and European multinationals operating here, and that gets counted as an Australian export activity. It's really important to scrutinise this whole issue of armaments exports in its totality. Hanwha might be one part of the problem, but there are many, many others.
Is there anything else that should be said about this rather frightening period of history?
Look, I think it's a time when we're really learning what's happening day by day. Everyone knows this. It's part of the intention of the Trump administration and the so-called MAGA factions that have taken control of the American government, aided by the biggest technological IT corporations in the world. We all know about this. We all know about the level of fascism that's involved. What's really hard to really work out is what's for show and what's real, what chaos is intended and what was unintended, and whether there is any chance that there will be some of these appalling decisions will be either mitigated or ameliorated, or whether they'll be reversed, whether it's on tariffs, economics, the extraordinary racist assault on diversity in America. We don't know. Will any elements of the Republican Party come back to life and say something sensible? Will the Democratic Party, be reborn? It's unlikely. Will the Democratic Party in America get over the liberal militarism that it tolerated in the Biden administration? We don't know. But what we need first and foremost in Australia is a government, and it would be nice, a media, and here I accept 3CR, which thought about the idea very seriously, openly, publicly, systematically and rigorously. When do Australian interests align with those of the United States, and when they do not? Now, it might be there are some things the Americans do that we have some interest in, but everything that we've been talking about today makes the point that Australian governments have not been thinking about that. That's not going to be as easy as it looks, but I think that's the project that we're involved in, all of us, now.